Welcome to the Water Cooler Podcast. My name is Brandon.
My name is Jeremy.
I'm Caleb.
And I'm Harley.
How many Doge stickers are in here?
Probably a lot.
It's a Ponzi scheme.
So many.
You said that Elon's getting sued for that?
What?
For Dogecoin as a Ponzi scheme. It's like a $270 billion lawsuit.
Why would he get sued for that?
Because it's just it's a Ponzi scheme.
But he didn't own it. Or like he didn't start it.
Yeah, he didn't start it.
I don't know. I saw a CBS article about it.
I don't think it was a Ponzi scheme, though, was it? Like, the guy that created it was like, I don't know why this took off. I literally just created this because I was bored. Just thought it was funny.
Yeah, he made it as a joke. But I would then say if you could state that Dogecoin is a Ponzi scheme, then you could make the same argument with Bitcoin.
With Bitcoin. Yeah, for sure.
I'm not saying he's actually going to get sued. I'm just saying I saw an article about it.
I think someone's reaching a little high.
Has he officially backed out on Twitter?
No.
They approved his buy, but he's going to lose a lot of money off of it.
Now he's
right, driving down the price.
He's backing. People say he's trying to back out because, and his reason is they won't give him the information he wants on like the bots.
That's a bullshit excuse. I don't know why that makes a difference on anything. He's just trying to back out because he drove the price down by $10, $20 a share or something like that.
Yeah, I bet he's looking for a way out.
But
I think you're right.
Why would he do that other than if he was like shorting, which then that would be a crime?
Because he's Elon Musk.
I don't know why you would buy a company and then drive the value down. I don't know. I don't really understand a lot of things.
Gives you an opportunity to come up with a new offer? I don't know.
I just don't know why you'd want to buy Twitter.
That doesn't
make any sense. As a recreational experiment, I don't know. I'm unaware.
I understand that less than I understand how HVAC systems work.
Then boy, do we have an episode for you.
That is the best transition I think I've ever seen.
Harley, what do you got about your HVAC system?
What do I know about it?
What do you got cooking in your apartment?
Dude.
Besides, you know, things.
Like meth?
Well, I wasn't going to say it.
I don't know if I have enough room in my apartment for that. Maybe if I cleared out the living room, I probably
they cooked
could.
It in a RV in Breaking Bad. True. I think you probably got enough room.
Yeah, I got to get the blueprint. No, I literally don't know anything. My apartment, I set the temperature. I think it's at like 74 right now. I don't know if that's right or wrong. I'll let you educate me on that's a good temperature. But it's pretty consistent. And then I don't go too cold with it. Because I sleep on it's like a pad that's called a chili pad, and you can set it to whatever temperature you want. So it can go down to like 60 degrees all the way up to 112 degrees or 115 degrees. And I set it around like 72 and I sleep like a baby. So it keeps my temperature the same throughout the night. So if I don't wake up in the middle of the night, like with super hot. So that's how I counteract the, warmness in my apartment.
I feel like they say the ideal sleeping temperature is like 62.
That's so cold, dude.
Yeah.
Holy That's so shit. Cold.
You'd have to have like a fan blowing on you.
Oh. Yeah, I have a fan blowing on. Like I've had that. And I need to sleep with a fan on, but I can't have it blowing directly on me because I wake up and I feel like I just died.
I position my fan. It's like one of those tower oscillating fans.
Yeah,
I position it. I put like my hand in front of the pillow and I just wait. I move it until I can't feel it on the pillow anymore. And I'm like, all right, this is good because I can't have it on my face. But everything else, I feel fine.
I heard fans were so bad because it like circulates all the stuff in the air. And
yeah, it does.
Inhaling it the whole night.
That's exactly what it does.
It's so bad.
It's what its purpose is.
You ever sleep with white noise? Like noise in the background?
I just sleep with a fan. I use that as white noise, but not like a noise machine or anything. Yeah. I could sleep if it was dead quiet.
But back to the HVAC stuff, I don't really pay too much attention to it.
So. Do you have a window unit, or is it just like a thermostat on the
central.
Wall?
Central. And then central. There's
central air, that's in your what apartment? It
is. Yeah, yeah.
So what's going on there is that you probably have a large unit somewhere on your roof of that apartment building. And when you, that'll be called an air handling unit or a rooftop unit, but in your case, it's probably an air handling unit. When you hit your thermostat on, that unit is going to just be churning air the whole time. It's always going to be on. Whether that actually goes into your apartment or not, because that's controlled by your thermostat, is a completely different issue. So as you turn your thermostat on, that you could have a damper that allows air to flow into your room, whether it be hot or cold, and the air handling unit is going to deliver hot or cold air until it's satisfied, and then either shut off heating and cooling, keep the fan on, or close the damper entirely. And that's exactly how your apartment is heating cooled. So every single time that you need something, that unit on the roof does its thing and delivers the comfortable air that you were looking for.
What I don't understand is, how does someone come up with that? Like, how do they, when that was first invented, how did they even, it probably started on a way smaller scale, right? Of doing it in like a lab or something.
I mean, yeah, everything goes through research and development.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't something they did. They built an apartment building. Like, oh, we're going to throw some units on there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, so new construction buildings, like, I guess I'm not entirely sure when standard air handling units like that or rooftop units were introduced, but they're probably more common in smaller spaces like maybe restaurants or small office areas or things like that. And they'll just... It requires a lot of ductwork, which carries the air from that unit down to wherever it needs to go by inducing pressure. There's a fan within that unit that blows air, creates positive pressure, and then delivers it to the room that it needs to go into. Back in the day, obviously, they probably started off with the refrigeration circuit, and then which is, you know, just a standard cooling method. From there, just adapted it to... you know, how can we deliver this to air? How can we make this work for refrigerators? Things like that. I couldn't give you a timeline as to when that all happened, but that's how your apartment works. Heating and cooling, both of it, all from that thermostat.
The other day, because our house is, I'm trying to figure out like how to cool it the most efficient way. And I guess the Department of Energy recommends setting your house when you're at home at 78 degrees, and then when you sleep, bump it up to 80, and then when you're not home, it was like 86 or 87. I'm like, that just seems way too high.
I would die. Like, oh my God.
Actually, sometimes when I come home, my wife keeps our house like on hot days at like 77, 78. But we'll just have like our ceiling fan going on high, so it doesn't really feel that bad.
That's what they said, is that to use fans because they use less energy. And I also had the thinking of like, oh, well, I can just leave the fan on when I'm not here and it'll like keep it cool. But then I read it's like a fan isn't keeping a room cool, it's keeping you cool. So leaving it on when you're not here doesn't make a lot of sense because it's kind of not cooling the room.
Yeah, so what fans do is, ever step outside on a nice hot summer day and you feel that nice cool breeze across your skin, or you're sweaty, and you know the sweat is just flowing off your I'm a sweaty person, so I'm used to this all the time. You feel that breeze on your skin, right? And it feels a little bit cold. That air isn't any colder than the actual air temperature. It's not like you got a cold burst of air that just graced itself onto you automatically. Now, what that is doing is it's pulling heat from your body. So the air temperature is the same, but the amount of heat that it's extracting is larger. So fans do a good job at promoting a sensible cooling effect. Sensible is going to mean pulling heat off of your body. Two types of the amount of how I'll say, energy in the air, right? One will be sensible. That will be the temperature that you see. So if you put your thermostat to 74 and you want to bring it down to 73, there's going to be a mix of sensible heat gain and latent heat gain. Latent heat gain is going to be the amount of water in the air that needs to be removed in order to bring that down to something that's more comfortable.
Mm.
So what fans do is they promote that sensible sensible heat gain or heat loss. Off you would be heat loss, in making it feel colder. Certain breezes or like fan speeds or air speeds can make your skin feel up to anywhere between, you know, 0 to up to, you know, 20, 30, 40 degrees colder than it actually is.
Yeah.
In the winter, that's why you get frostbite on very heavily windy days. That's why you get frostbite quicker. In the summer, that's why it feels like it's something more comfortable. So if the Department of Energy, if you're sitting exactly like in our studio right now, we have a ceiling fan. If you crank this room up to 70 or 80 degrees and turn it on high, it may feel like 70 because the air is extracting all of that heat from your skin.
So
fans would do a good job at that sensible cooling effect onto your body directly, or they do move air around. So only if it's a very large space would that really make a lot of sense, where there's going to be huge heat rises naturally.
Yeah.
So if it's a very tall room, you know, a ceiling on a ceiling fan, like on breweries and such, that would be an example to maybe circulate that air around because heat's going to rise.
So I know on some of the fans, it's a switch, the one we have in here. On the remote, I can just click it to turn it from like summer mode to winter mode. And ultimately all it does is just flips what way it rotates. So then in the winter, is it trying to push heat down because heat rises?
In the winter, so in the summer, it's going to be, if you think about a fan in the air that it moves as like a cone going down, well, a cone or a cylinder. So in the summer, you want to push the air down into that cylinder so it's going directly on you. So that when you're hot, there's a lot of air velocity going across your skin to make you feel colder. In the winter, you don't want to feel colder. So the winter mode in that case would reverse the fan direction and actually push the air up instead of down.
And since heat rises, it's bringing the heat past you?
Since heat rises, it will be pushing the heat that's trapped up on the ceiling and pushing that to the floor. So the fan is taking the hot air at the ceiling, and it's going to push it all the way around the room and then push it back down to the floor.
Oh, okay.
So that's more common in larger rooms, like like very tall ceilings, because there can be a huge temperature gradient. Yep. There may be some stray heat that sits up on there. Most people don't run fans in the winter because you get that wind effect on your arm and it feels uncomfortable.
I probably don't run a fan in the winter other than my bedroom, because I have to sleep with a fan on. And it's probably nothing to do with like the effect that the fan is doing. It's more just the sound of it.
White noise, baby.
I know, but like I sleep really well when there's a thunderstorm. But if I'm listening to the sound of a thunderstorm, my body's like, it's not real.
And oh, that's, I love listening to the Google Home that we have makes sounds, and one's rain. I love that noise.
It's like nice to listen to, but it's like, I think my body's just like, we know this is fake.
who are you trying to fool?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
So I guess I'm going to guess why the Department of Energy would recommend such a high temp is because it's probably going to use your AC less, which means you're going to spend less money.
Correct.
But really, at the end of the day, it's whether you're okay with that temperature.
Yeah, all depending on. There's a organization called ASHRAE, or the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
They do focus a lot on commercial applications and industrial applications, but they also focus on residential applications as well. ASHRAE, in doing, they've been around for a while. I think it's since the 50s. I should know that. They have done studies on human comfort zones, which, as you can imagine, shifts between summer and winter.
Yeah.
But it also takes into effect that sensible and latent terms, or the temperature and the humidity in the air. So if you can imagine outside right now in Minnesota, it's about 91 degrees, and the humidity, as soon as I can open up my Weather Channel app,
probably
it's to give you something high for reference, has a dew point of 61. So although the relative humidity is only 39%, and I'm not going to give a lecture on relative humidity, I'll focus on dew point, that the dew point is going to signify, hey, if the temperature falls below the dew point, that's when condensation starts to form on objects. So if you pull a beverage out of a refrigerator that's running poorly, and that refrigerator is at 60 degrees, and you pull that pop can or that beer can out or whatever,
yep,
and it starts to condense on the outside, that means that the dew point is below that temperature mark.
Okay.
Not as common in the winter because dew points are extremely low. So ASHRAE's comfort zone focuses on both those temperature and humidity. And some people can withstand a certain amount of temperature and humidity up to a certain temp and dew point. Some people can't. So it's a big oblong rectangle that kind of hovers anywhere between 60 degrees maybe in the winter, 64 on the maybe on the low side, to, you know, maybe 66 in the summer, all the way up to expanding a range of probably ending around somewhere between 75 to 80 degrees in the summer. So there's a huge range there, obviously, because if you're in the winter and it's 60 degrees out, this is great. You could sit out there all day.
Yeah.
Some people couldn't. And same thing in the summer. Some people can handle more wetness. So the DOE is going to say, well, you can technically be comfortable in this range, this yep. hypothetical range, but some people can't. And that's where, you know, some people would run their AC unit. Maybe they do keep their house at 78 or as low as 70. And that really just all depends on how much money you want to fork out
yeah.
to your energy bill.
Well, and they phrased it of saying like 78 is probably not going to work for everyone, but they phrased of like start there and then decrease it by 2 degrees until you feel like you hit the temperature you feel is like comfortable. Which like I've then heard some people that's like, well, why don't I start at 70, go up? Well, it's like
you're more likely to find something that you're comfortable with at a lower temp.
Yeah.
At that front. It's like, yeah, I'm cool at 72. Why do we have to go up?
Yeah.
Or you might actually be comfortable at 74.
So I'm curious, because I've always been told to, in rooms you are not using, close the vents and close the door to save energy because you don't want to heat or cool a room you're not using. But what I read online was I don't fully understand it. It pretty much just said that you're putting pressure on the system because it's sending air to that vent regardless, but it's not going up. So it's then just coming back and it's putting more pressure back, and it didn't make sense.
Yeah. So the thought process there is if you aren't using a room, you definitely could close vents, but that would kind of be a hassle. You can close doors. I think that's probably fine because, sure, you don't want to overheat or overcool spaces that you aren't using. I don't know if that would really save a whole lot unless it's like a whole basement that you're not using, or, you know, a whole upstairs that you're not using. When you do close a vent, you do create more pressure onto the system. So how in your home, how that works is in your basement or wherever your unit is sitting is going to be the same thing as your furnace.
Yep.
In your AC unit. There's going to be a fan or a blower in some metal box downstairs. And that fan is going to be designed to run at a certain external static pressure. That static pressure is the amount of pressure that's created by the ductwork used to deliver the air. So if you keep closing vents, that's going to be creating more pressure. And what that means is that more air has to go elsewhere. If you close everything, you're going to probably put so much pressure on that blower that it's going to stop working.
Yeah.
Generally doesn't happen as it shouldn't happen in residential applications, but can happen in other areas. So in your home, if you do close a vent, what's likely going to happen is that air is going to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
So in this room, for instance, if we close to the studio, that air would be directed out into the hallway or the other bedroom. Yep. It's just being diverted somewhere else. If you close it to a basement or an entire level, you know, that's a lot more air that you have to make up. So what you'll notice is that the air coming out of the vents is going to be coming out of there faster. Quite noticeably. That may cause issues on your blower, depending on how old it is, or if it's been balanced, or if the belt is bad. But that's kind of what's going on there. I think generally, the only way or only reason you should really open and close vents is going to be in the basement or in an attic space or like a upstairs space.
Yep.
During the summer and the winter. And the ones that you want to close are the supply and return vents, mainly because your basement's probably going to be about 10 degrees colder than 5 to 10 degrees colder in the winter and summer probably.
Yeah.
So in the summer, you want to open up those return vents, bring that cold air so that it's when it's recycled into your system, it's less work that your AC unit has to do. In the winter, you want to open up the return vents upstairs because heat rises. So the upstairs will likely be 5 to 10 degrees warmer than the main level of the house. So opening up the return vents upstairs in the winter will help you reduce heating costs for the rest of the home. Mm. But you'll still want to, I would recommend keeping the supply ones open because you still want air circulation in there. And double check your air filter.
Yeah, it pretty much just says closing several vents makes the system have to work overtime to heat or cool the rest of the house and can increase air pressure throughout the home duct system. This increased pressure is not detrimental to your HVAC system for a short time, but can cause issues if left unchecked.
Way to go, Brandon.
That was right on.
You're so smart, man.
Or I've also heard some people say that buying like a smaller AC unit for your home, like one relative to like your home size, is better than buying one that's oversized. But I've also heard people argue like, well, if you buy an oversized one, like your home just cools faster, thus it's more efficient. But what do you think about that?
The larger one will cool it faster, most definitely. The only thing, so you may save energy in how often it is running. The only thing I'll comment on there is that the lifespan of that AC unit is going to be depending upon that compressor. And the lifespan of a compressor is going to be the amount of times that it turns on and off or how many times it cycles. So if you have a smaller unit for your home that turns on and runs for a while, you won't save as much on energy savings, but over the lifespan of the unit, you'll have to replace it less. So if you get something that's way oversized and you're saving, you know, quite a bit on the electrical for when it does turn on and off, then, you know, that you maybe you can marginalize that. But over time, as that thing keeps cycling, the lifespan for that unit is going to be cut dramatically just because it's cycling on and off and on and off. Because in that sense, your home's going to be cooling really quickly, but it also might heat up really quickly, which is pretty common in the summer with radiation being the main form of heat into your home. Whereas the smaller one may just turn on, run for a long time, and kind of plateau and just keep the house at a temperature without cycling as much.
I think this is similar. When I first got my house, or moved into a house that I had to, I guess, do the maintenance on, I realized I had to, like, change out the filter for your heating and cooling system. And if you go online to the store, there's thousands of different options. There's, like, the ones that they claim is thicker and it filters more, or there's, like, the ones that are super cheap and don't filter much. My dad always said to use shittier ones in the summer because so much air is going through it, and then in the winter you don't have to change it as often, so then you can put the nicer ones in because you use them more. But I never understood any of that. I just followed what he told me to do.
I'd almost argue the exact opposite.
And maybe I'm in remembering it wrong, and I did the exact opposite of what he told me to do.
I think you're putting too much thought into it.
Yeah.
So on air filtration, the main things they're going to look for, and they make it easy when you go to, I can't remember what brand it is, but most of them make it easy for what it's actually filtering out.
Mm-hmm.
Find one that, for you, that looks like, oh, this one makes sense. Like, it might be pollutants from pets. Great. I'm having allergies. I should get this allergy one. Great. Pick one. The more it filters out, obviously, the better the filter, quote unquote. That refers back to what they call a MERV rating.
Yep.
So typically, you'll see like a MERV 8 is going to be a very standard, large kind of particles, hair, things like that. MERV 11, 13, 15, well, yeah, probably won't see 15s. MERV 13s are going to catch kind of some of the smaller stuff in up that front. What you would want to do in the summer, the thing that cools down the air is called a coil.
Yep.
So refrigerant runs through, cold refrigerant runs through that. Air bypasses over it and chills it down. If you have a lot of hair or particles that go onto that coil, you can get clogged up and it won't perform as efficiently. So actually in the summer, you may want, I would say at least a MERV 8 filter is fine. I would probably pick that. And then in the winter, the furnace that your home is using isn't as delicate per se.
Yeah.
So you could probably get by with a smaller filter if that's what you're really going for. Otherwise, I would just stay with a MERV 8 filter year round.
That's probably what my dad told me, and I just heard it in the completely opposite order. I'm like, yep, gonna do that.
Unless you have allergies or something like that, then I would just move up in filtration until you feel comfortable in your home.
Yeah, and I think now I just change it every month. Just I don't really have an explanation of why.
I think it's every 3. But if you're changing it every month, that's great.
Pretty much what my dad recently told me is, like, I would recommend going down there every month, pulling it up.
Checking it.
If it's dirty, change it. If it's not, then, yeah, you can probably put it back down. But if it's, like, in the middle, you could be like, well, I'll leave it. But then you probably don't want to wait another month to go check it again because it's going to be too dirty at that point. Growing up, my parents always had a air exchanger in their house, and our new house has one of those, and I never really understood what it did. And when we bought our house, they gave us like this thing to watch, and the person in the video explained an air exchanger as the lungs of your house. And I was like, that put it into a mindset or like an explanation that I can understand. But then I'm like, why? I'm like, but a house isn't a person. So I'm like, how is it the lungs of the house then?
Newer homes and newer constructed buildings. Before I touch on that, I'm going to touch on the 3 forms of heat transfer, and then we're going to circle back around. So in heating and cooling, the 3 forms of heat transfer are going to be conduction, which is heat by contact; convection, which is going to be heat by air or fluid passing over it. So in this case, Caleb's blowing on Harley. So in this case, it could be like the fan or a ceiling fan.
What?
And then the third form is radiation.
So a fan is like a convection?
Yeah. Convection is a fluid passing over something and taking away heat that way.
Oh, I guess that makes sense, because when I first hear convection, I think of like a convection oven.
Yep.
But isn't ultimately that just using a fan to just cycle
circulate
heat?
Yep.
And I always knew what a convection oven was, but I have a Traeger, and what the guy when I bought it said ultimately what a Traeger is also kind of like a convection oven because there's the fan that's blowing the heat. And I was like, okay, it's a smoker, but I don't see how this is a convection oven.
So
but it does the job.
I think in ovens the biggest thing is just uniform heat. So the oven fan would just be, once it's circulated, it's heat all the way across, or otherwise you might get hot spot. I think that's what anyway. So in those 3 forms, we're going to focus on convection right now.
Yeah.
Convection also or relating to your home is going to be related to infiltration and fenestration. Fenestration focusing on or is the term for windows and doors, but it also refers to the infiltration of air, the amount of outside air that comes through your windows. On older construction buildings and homes, there's a lot of infiltration through doors and windows because they were built like shit, which is fine. They didn't have the technology. Great. Now we do a newer homes. So the higher efficiency window and doors that you have, the less amount of fenestration or infiltration through the those doors and windows, which is good. You save on energy. It's also bad because you need outside air and fresh air to live. Otherwise, you get building toxicity syndrome or sick building syndrome, and you'll die from volatile organic compounds or get really sick from it. The new car smell is something that if you keep ingesting, you're going to probably get the flu-like symptoms, and it's not great for you because it's plastics. Mm. So in doing that and in getting rid of infiltration through these doors and windows, you still need an introduction of outside air. In homes, you don't just want to open up a window all the time. So what an air exchanger does is it heats up or cools down the outside air based off of the your home's temperature.
Yep.
So what it's doing, and it probably looks like a cube, that cube is taking outside air from one side and your home air from one side, and it's kind of collecting itself in this cube and averaging between those temperatures about, it's about an average. And then on one side, that outside air is being introduced into your home at a warmer or colder temperature, and the temperature your home air is being exhausted out. Why that's important is if you just had only outside air coming in, it'd be like your home was a balloon. They would just keep pumping air in, and the more outside air you put in, the bigger the balloon gets. Things are going to be overpressurized, things like that. Probably doesn't have that much power, but it can happen.
So I could explode my house that way.
Yeah, your doors might start popping open or your windows might start popping open. Vice versa, you don't want a lot of negative pressure in your house because then that would increase the amount of infiltration through doors and windows because there's a lot of pressure pulling outside air in. So you don't want that either. So when you turn on your kitchen fan, that's going to create negative pressure in your home eventually because that air is being exhausted out. So that's why you have an air exchanger.
Crazy.
Jesus.
Like, the...
I don't think you guys were ready for me to do this topic, but I was ready to do this topic.
In, like, the whole time, like, I'm viewing, like, that Billy Madison thing, but it's not that, like, what you just said doesn't make sense, or it's like, it was so stupid. It's like, it makes a lot of sense, but I don't get what you're saying.
That's fine. I could draw it up on a whiteboard if you want me to.
But, like, and, like, I would say the air exchanger one was the one that made the most sense. Obviously, I still don't understand how it's the lung, but I now see what you say of like, because what my dad says is it's ultimately the setting is you're determining how often you want it to cycle the inside air with the outside air. And then I'm like, well, what setting do I set it to? And he's like, normally you follow like humidity.
So that's one thing that it can help with too in humidity control. Is that it can also pick up the amount, or like if the outside air humidity is higher or lower than your indoor temperature or your indoor humidity, that it can also run in that way. So as a means of, there's two ways to pull humidity out of your house. One's to run your air conditioning a lot.
Yep.
Two is to introduce outside air that has lower humidity than your current humidity in your house. So exchangers can do that in playing that averaging game between your home humidity and the outside air humidity. And then if that average is going to be lower, it can lower the humidity of your home. So some homes use that to as a means of humidity control versus otherwise you need like essentially a sprinkler in your ductwork to shoot air or like a humidifier or a physical dehumidifier.
Yeah. I read this too, and maybe I'm the only one who thought this, but like they said, say you leave your house, you turn the AC off, you come home, it's a lot warmer than you thought. You're like, I'm going to drop it to 70 because I want it to get colder faster. And it's like, your house isn't going to get colder faster. It obviously, if you're at 80 and you're trying to bring it to 70, it's a massive drop you have to do. But it's like, it's not going to, like, if you set it to 70, it's not going to be like, well, he wants it really low, so I'm just going to speed up this process and get it colder a lot faster. It's like, it still has the same duration that it has to get there. So setting it super low, and I'm like, do people think that if they set it super low, it will get colder faster?
Yeah, I mean, people would probably assume that the air coming out of it is colder.
Yeah.
Which would then make it colder quicker, but sounds like that's not the case. You know?
Yeah. I saw both sides of it. I'm like, I could see my brain being like, yeah, just do it to 70. It'll get colder faster. But then, like, after I explained, I'm like, okay, now I get this.
Yeah, it won't.
Yeah.
Your system runs at a constant speed. Unless you are paying for a very fancy system, which is not common in residential homes, that would have a variable speed components. But I don't think that's happening.
One last thing from my side, and this is a question. When we were building our house, we could have paid extra to add a dual, ultimately what I understood is they would put a thermostat on our main floor and one up here. And I asked my dad, because I'm like, why would someone do that? And he goes, it's if you wanted to ultimately add more customization to your house. But he goes, normally you would probably see that in larger houses. Obviously, if you have one thermostat, it's only pulling, it's like looking at that location. But if you have a massive house, it's not really looking at those far out rooms. How does a dual system even work?
So the benefit to that would be, like on your house here, do you ever notice that the main floor and this upper floor where we are is hotter or colder than one another? So the benefit there would be, if you wanted to keep these at the same exact temperature, if you had a system to maintain only this floor, then that system would just run to maintain this floor. So right now, anytime that the thermostat downstairs calls for heating or cooling, then that's just going to heat everything. Where up here, you may need it quicker, but not as quick as downstairs.
So is it all, would we in a way have two systems?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the way that that AC unit can be broken up is there may be two fans on there to run the two different compressors, or break those out into two different units, own refrigeration circuits, or it could be one system running at half speed or full speed. There's a couple different ways to do it, but that's essentially what would be going on. In my house, for instance, I'll probably have to get one of those ductless systems to put upstairs, and it'll be running in the same way, where that's theoretically on its own system. Okay.
Yeah, I think they called it like dual zone something.
Yeah. Multi-zone control.
Yeah. I'm going to guess you listened to the gas cast.
Yeah, of course.
I think I mentioned this.
You did.
About car AC.
You did.
Was what I said right?
I listened to that one today, but just to catch up, but I don't remember your.
I think from my understanding, it was telling in your car to just in the summer put it to max cold, but how to save gas is to increase and decrease the fan speed. But then it also said to, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to say the exact thing that I said last week, and then you guys told me what it actually meant. In the car, there's the car. The
circulation.
Yeah. There's the circle one and the one that goes through it. And it said to use the one that goes through it because it's more fuel efficient. Mm. And during our last, this whole conversation, I was thinking of the air exchanger aspect of it. If that one's pulling air in from outside and the cycle one is just cycling air in your car.
I'm going to be straight up honest. I have no idea how car AC systems work. I know the premise behind it, but I don't really know what all the buttons mean.
Yeah. But, and I'm pretty sure I said this too. I also found an article that stated the exact opposite. And I'm like, great. What do I do now?
Post each one on Twitter and see which one gets taken down.
So far, I just, like 50% of the drive, I do it one way, and then 50% of the drive, I do it the other way. So So then at least 50% of the drive, I did the right thing.
You should do the exact opposite of that. The next time that you fill up your gas tank, only do one way and then see what your MPGs are. And then the next time you fill up, do the other way and see what your MPGs are. And then prove both of those people wrong.
Yeah. Right. Actually, I'll probably end up doing this.
I would do that.
But my hypothesis, I haven't used that word since college.
Scientific method.
Yeah. Is the difference is probably going to be so minimal. Yeah, I won't even see.
That's what my guess would be. Your best way is just not use AC.
Listen back in 4 weeks.
Timestamp.
Because I drive a Prius and I fill up like once every 2 weeks.
Plus the temperature changes all the time.
Yeah.
Outside temperature.
And driving habits.
You have to do like a month's worth at a time. Could be an 8-week experiment.
We'll see how this pans out. And if I actually do write down all the information.
4 weeks later. Hey, how's the thing going?
I'm going to show up to work in a lab coat. And I'm like, what are you doing? Doing research.
Don't worry about it.
I'm a scientist. Only on my way to and from work.
The only other tip I'm going to give before we jump off HVAC stuff, if you, and Harley, this one will pertain to you too, before you fall asleep. the best way to keep your home cold is to limit the amount of infiltration, so air going through doors and windows, and then two, limiting the amount of radiation, which is one you'll have a lot more control over. So you'll notice in the summer, you're going to be standing at a window and it's going to feel really hot. So I would recommend putting in blinds. The thicker the blind, the more radiation it will not allow through into your house. So if you really want to cut down on your home energy costs, you could put blackout curtains on every single window, but then you'll run light bulbs more often. Otherwise, any sort of blind would be good. And that's one of the easier ways. Blinds can be expensive, but curtains could be a pretty cost-effective way to keep your home energy savings.
Yes. Just in regards to that, when we put in blinds, we only have one that is blackout, and that is in our room. The rest are not blackout, so like some light comes through. But then in here, I have blackout shades because I prefer blackout shades or blinds. That's like how I was raised. I think that's like what my parents do, but my wife Mariah does not. I don't like, she's like, I want the ones that have the light. And I'm like, okay, but I just prefer in the room to have the ability to just make the whole room black. And with the other ones, you can't. I was also raised with curtains. She was not. I'm like, all right, well, then I'm going to put it in my office.
It might be a finance thing because I'm kind of the same way. And I just, in college, I would just black out my room and light a candle and just crank out some numbers.
In college, I wanted it to be blackout, but all I did was took an old bed sheet and hammered it over my window. See,
cheap blinds or cheap curtains right there.
Would it most likely, because how you said, like, if you do blackout, then you're going to use more lighting. Isn't probably lighting less energy?
Yeah, if you have LED lights, probably a lot less energy.
Yeah.
Okay. So, question for you. Kind of talking shit about some people that I used to live with in college. their whole idea of how to keep the house cool during dog hot days of the summer.
Open the fridge.
No, but they probably would have done that.
That would keep your house warmer.
They would close the windows, not letting any air flow through.
Is the AC on?
No.
The only way that would help is if you did have blackout curtains on your windows.
We did not.
So if you just had the windows closed with no AC running, you're essentially allowing all of that radiation to come into your house and just heat up the house.
Okay. All right.
So if you had the window open, it would probably be the outside temperature, you know, whatever that is. That's how hot your house would be. But then at least you get a breeze every now and then. It's not really going to heat or cool your house, only at night. unless your house is colder from the night before and you had your windows open. So if you just shut it and you leave, no curtains closed or anything, just like no a curtains. Greenhouse, just like a greenhouse.
So that's we exactly just baked alive.
Yeah.
God, I just remember those days just walk in and a wall of heat would just hit you.
It's probably very uncomfortable because there's no air movement.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, I guess now we can roll into the water cooler wrap up. This is, I always have things prepared for this, but I never write them down.
I've got something prepared, but it's not relevant to the topic. Is that still okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
it does not have to do
it. Yeah. The topic.
So I saw family this weekend. Okay.
Good for you.
And 5 to 7 to probably 5+ years ago, I would have, you know, kind of not dreaded seeing family or anything, but I wouldn't be like, oh, I can't wait to go see, like, I can't wait to go see them, all of that. So I went down to the good old Iowa, and I saw family I haven't talked to in a decent amount of time. I saw my mom and all of that. And like I said, 5+ years ago, I probably had been like, okay, like this is going to be a long trip. I went into it knowing that, like, not everything was going to go great, but I was like, I'm going to appreciate it, and I'm going to appreciate the time that I have with them. And it was one of the best times I've had, because I didn't, like, think to myself, oh, I can't wait to get home. I can't wait to, like, till I'm done with this. Like, I just enjoyed it, and it just was a different experience. So I definitely recommend just try to take those moments that you have with family, no matter if they're, you know, potentially annoying or just, like, you know, repetitive or anything like that. Just appreciate it, because you never know when you won't have those moments again. And it just felt nice being able to just be like, okay, you know, I'm going to roll with the punches. So that's my tip for the week.
And you were at an amusement park.
Yes. We rode some rides and, you know, had a good time. Good one.
Happy for you, man. That sounds fun.
Yeah, dude.
I don't know why, but so it's obvious because I probably know nothing about Iowa, but I'm like, they have an amusement park?
Dude, it's probably the biggest attraction in Iowa. It's called Adventureland.
Okoboji?
No, it's an adventure. It's Adventureland. It's in Altoona, which is down by Des Moines.
I
think I've been to that one as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went there when I was a kid too. It's awesome.
Have you been to Valley Fair?
Yeah.
Is it bigger than Valley Fair?
I don't know. I'd have to like compare the two, but I feel like they're maybe in the same size, but again, it wouldn't, I don't know. They're both pretty big.
Because I've been to 3 amusement parks in my life. Is MOA considered an amusement park?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there.
Well, Nickelodeon Universe is.
Valley Fair and then Busch Gardens. But I was so young at Busch Gardens, I'm relatively sure it's bigger than Valley Fair because they also had a zoo. But yeah, like my visions of amusement parks are super small because it's now Nickelodeon Universe, which is in a mall, and then Valley Fair, which I don't think is big when you compare it to other.
Yeah, I guess I haven't really compared amusement parks to each other before.
Well, what's strange is that I went to Adventureland when I was a kid, and when I was there this past weekend, it was like so weird. It's like I remember being here 15 years ago and things are still similar, like still similar layout. And it's like, wow, I remember walking around like as a little kid, you know, it's just super odd to me.
My tip for the week, just to not get sidetracked.
Yeah.
Is that in 4 months, there will be elections coming up, and to register to vote for your local elections.
God,
that's my tip.
I forget.
It's a good one.
You're a great public servant, by the way.
Thank you.
Are you running?
I'm more of a jogger.
Oh, so you're not like running for politics.
Great A.
No, I'm not running
for politics. That was a good diversion. Thank you.
He might not, but if we write him in enough, he will be.
So,
you show up
anyone's
on TV,
looking for an alternative choice.
Ordered on some city Brandon somewhere. So, yeah, that's my tip. Go register to vote.
Thanks, Brandon.
Caleb, what's your tip of the week?
Yeah, I guess my tip of the week would be that if you have tense muscles from anything, you know, sitting in a chair, working out a lot, whatever it may be, just stressed, go hit up the sauna. I've been hitting up an infrared sauna about every other day for about 15 minutes. God damn. It's done wonders.
I'm jealous of you. Sorry.
Go to your local community center. They might have one.
Didn't mean to hijack that. I just got excited. Saunas are cool.
Yeah, they're great.
That's a good one. Good job, Caleb.
This is my tip of the week.
You're going to steal mine?
No.
Saunas.
Saunas are great, but I have started like stretching more.
Yeah.
And
oh, good idea.
That has felt like made my body feel amazing. And it's like, it's the simplest thing to do. Like you can do it before bed. You can do it when you wake up. You could probably find stretches to do at your desk. You can do it while you watch TV.
It, you know, in high school, every day you had a stretch in gym class. Mm-hmm. Why don't they make you do that as an adult? Like who, they should have gave you a pamphlet when you graduated and you're like, hey, here's your daily stretches. Just keep doing that. You lazy piece of shit.
They probably
I could have used the pamphlet.
They probably told us, hey, you should do this the rest of your life, and we're like, no.
I should have listened.
Shut. I ain't listening to you.
I like that one too. Stretching's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was our wrap up for the week.
Thanks for listening to hear me jab about stuff. Go HVAC.
Yeah. How to cool heat and
hopefully this will lead
and infiltrate
to your cool summer.
And saving a couple pennies.
Yeah, probably.
Then spend it on gas.
Yes. All right. See you.
Peace.
Peace.
Hey, I'm the truth from the truth. I could buy it, but it's just a rental. It's not a good investment. Being bad with your money is being good at flexing. They always chasing a bag, I guess they couldn't catch it. They trying to be like me, but it's not a good impression. I used to get on instrumentals just to get it out my mental. I was handing out my demos and they wouldn't check it. They told me I'd never make it, but now they get the message. That's important information, so I wouldn't text it. They want to get a reply, they want screenshots, but they won't get a response, not even three dots. These sheep talk, no lying, they throwing cheap shots. I had to cut some people off, I had to detox. I keep talking in my head, I got deep thoughts. On the steps where me and Navy did the beatbox. Been old school like Reeboks with knee socks. Corbin know I fuck them up when the beat drops. I'm coming back more level-headed.
This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, please consult a professional.